Welcome to Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashantinilam. I am team leader Sai Bishu and welcome to our series Saints, the Soul of India. 3 weeks ago on the Thursday before Shivaratri, that is on March 3rd, 2016, Shivaratri this year was celebrated on March 7th. So on March 3rd we started the story of the Shaivite saint Manikyavasagar. The way Shiva has blessed him and the way Manikyavasagar has inspired millions to melt in devotion to Lord Shiva is so soul-filling. Let us too in this moment melt into that Shiva consciousness. Let us offer ourselves at the feet of the Mahadeva and seek his grace to proceed in this program. At the feet of Sai Shiva. With his blessings, let's carry on in this program. So let me give you the story of Manikyavasagar that we have covered till now in the previous episodes. Now as a brief and quick recap. Manikavasaga was born as Vadavurar. He was called so because he belonged to a place called Tiruvadavur, or simply called Vadavur. He was born to a very pious and devoted Brahmin couple, and as a child he was precocious and disciplined. He grew into a man of ability, intelligence and good character. Soon the Pandya king of the region, Harimarthana Pandya, heard about him, and he was so impressed with him that he appointed him as his prime minister. Later the king sends Vadavurar on a mission to buy horses for his stable from a place called Tiruperandurai. Vadavurar undertakes the journey gladly because it gives an opportunity to him to visit many holy places on the way, and he is always a seeker, always praying intensely for a guru to guide him to attain the Lord. And when he reaches Tiruperandurai, he goes to the shrine of Lord Shiva there, and as he is circumambulating the temple, he notices a Siddha Purusha, an enlightened master, and a few disciples sitting around him. Something within Vadavurar says that this is the master I have been searching. So he rushes there and falls at the feet of that guru. That guru is actually Lord Shiva. Shiva, in the guise of a Sadguru, was waiting for Vadavurar to notice him. In fact, Shiva has been there in that place as a school teacher for a month, maybe preparing the place for this landmark event. Yes, it was landmark event, because the moment Vadavurar falls at Shiva's feet, Shiva raises him, and the intensity of Vadavurar and Lord Shiva's grace is so much that one loving glance from Shiva and Vadavurar is awakened to divine consciousness. His eye of wisdom opens, and that moment on, he starts singing hymns in praise of the Lord. And because each verse that came out of his mouth, came out of his lips, was like a Manikyam or a gem, Lord Shiva calls him Manikyavasagar, the one from whose lips gems roll forth. Then Manikyavasagar, inspired and commanded by Shiva, stays on in that place and decides to renovate the shrine of Lord Shiva there, and he does it with the money that the king had given him, actually to buy horses. And when he is thus engaged, the king summons him. Then Manikyavasagar does not know what to do, because he does not have the money or the horses. And it's at this point that Shiva comes to his rescue. He comes in his dream and tells him to go to the king and tell the king that the horses that he wanted will arrive to his palace on a particular day in the month of Shravana. And Lord Shiva also gives him a gem to be handed over to the king as a proof. So thus assured by Shiva and his grace and protection, Manikyavasagar goes to the king and presents the jewel and tells the king that the horses are arriving in that particular day in the month of Shravana. But meanwhile, the king finds out from his spies that Manikyavasagar has indeed not bought any horses. Rather, he has misused the funds given to him to build a temple for Shiva, and so he immediately puts him in prison. This is something like what happened to Saint Ramadas too. Ramadas was a tax collector in Andhra Pradesh who used the state's funds to build a temple for Rama, and the Muslim ruler puts Ramadas in jail. And then, to put an end to the ordeal of his devotee, Lord Rama and Lakshmana come in the guise of Ramdas's relatives and gives the tax money to the king, and they ensure that Ramdas is released. In Manikyavasagar's story too, something of the same nature happens. Lord Shiva, on that appointed day, comes to the king in the guise of a horseman and delivers the horses to the king. Shiva actually converts the jackals of the jungle into horses and presents it to the king. So this is where the discussion had ended in the previous episode. So let's continue from here. Let's go to the conversation I had recorded with Mrs. Lalita Shekhar, a Radio Sai volunteer.
And if you see again Manikyavasagar's story, is something similar.
Mm-hmm.
The king is astonished that this horseman from nowhere lands up and the king is very happy. He takes delivery of the horses.
It is said that the horsemen also gave tips to the king as to how to select the good horses.
Fantastic. So the king was very happy, definitely. He was astonished, but he was very delighted. He's got his horses and he orders that all these horses should be tied at the same place where all these other horses are kept. Of course, he thanked the horseman profusely and he gave him some presents. And so the horseman, like in Ramadasa's story, the horseman says, now that you've got your horses, you release Manika Vasagar from the prison.
Hmm.
And the king released him as expected. But here there is a twist, you know. So that is where the Ramadasa story sort of
had a happy ending.
Yeah, had a happy ending. It is a beautiful story.
Afterwards, of course, Ramadasa went on with his sadhana and he had composed so many wonderful kirtanas on Sri Rama that it is said that he had inspired to the extent of inspiring Tyagaraja.
Tyagaraja, wow.
அப்பராம பக்தி எந்தோ அப்பராம பக்தி எந்தோ கோபராம பக்தி எந்தோ கோபராம பக்தி எந்தோ கோபராம பக்தி எந்தோ கோபராம பக்தி எந்தோ
In Manika Vasagar story, there is a twist here because even though the Lord came as a horseman and even though the Lord did this amazing thing of delivering his horses, bringing them out of nowhere, he knows that the money was not spent to buy the horses. They were spent to build a temple which is there to see. But still, somehow, the king is just happy that he's got his horses and he doesn't think beyond it.
Hmm.
So what happened is perhaps God thought, I have to bring now more twists in the tale because the king has not learned the lesson.
Yes,
the king has not got it. It is unfortunate. Hmm. He's just happy, you know, it is like you have got, as Swami says, you know, you go to the Kalpataru and you ask for coffee powder.
Coffee powder.
Like he got his horses, he had got actually God. He got the horses and he's very happy and he's oblivious of everything about how it happened. He's not even thinking. He's so dull. So he has to do something to
wake him up.
Yeah, wake him up, put some sense into him. And so what happens that night, as the story goes, all these new horses, which were with these old horses, suddenly these new horses, they go back to their old forms of being jackals.
Jackals.
And they kill the horses in the stable.
Oh my God.
And so there is complete havoc.
Naturally.
There's complete mayhem in the city. And because, you know, they not only do that, they kill the horses and they go back to the jungle.
They run back to the jungle.
Run back to the jungle. And then this happens, the king becomes angry now. So this Pandya king becomes angry and then he feels, no, this Manika Vasagar has tricked me and there are no horses. Not only in the no horses, my old horses have died. And the reason is because of this Manika Vasagar, he has played some joke on me and he puts back Manika Vasagar into the prison.
Yes, as you rightly said, the king is not using his intelligence to even introspect a little. If he had done that, he would have understood how the flow of events.
Yes.
And maybe he should have been wise enough not to imprison the devotee again. The Lord will not keep quiet. I mean, if his devotee is in trouble, he had to do something, right? So according to Ishvara's orders, the waters of river Vaigai rose in floods and the full city of Madurai was underwater. Yes, there was a huge flood and the complete city, the capital city of Pandya kingdom, Madurai, was underwater. So now the king was very shocked. He was alarmed.
And if you see the story, even now the king doesn't get it. Actually.
He doesn't get it, even at this point.
Actually, you know, to me, it seems very strange that king put Manikavasagar in the prison again. It is very puzzling. He really was very dull-witted because he did not think that if a person could convert jackals into horses, and horses can convert back into jackals, then this person is no ordinary. Even he can do anything. He can perhaps convert the king into a baby. He can do anything.
True. And if you look at it, he had profound statements and reports from his spies that no horses were bought. Every penny was spent on renovating the temple. Still, somebody came and delivered the horses. Not only that, horses turned into jackals. Not only that, at least now, if he had any sense, he would have asked Manikavasagar to do something about the floods.
Yeah.
Instead of that, he imprisoned him.
Yeah, he imprisoned him. No, the floods happened
because
he imprisoned him.
Now he goes on to ask every citizen of the city to build bunds.
Yes.
To the river so that, you know, just to control the flood waters.
Yes.
Even now, he is depending on his intelligence. The so-called lack of intelligence.
There are so many signs, you know, sometimes, you know, we are so blind to such obvious signs that Lord gives us about who He is. It's like Swami does Lingodvam, yeah, Swami is human only. It's like that, you know.
True.
He does something, today He would have healed a person from cancer, but tomorrow if He asks, what is your name? And we think, oh, Swami doesn't know.
Hmm.
You know,
maybe that's the play of the Lord.
The play of the Lord.
He shows His divinity and the next day He wants...
But it is for us to be always aware.
Exactly.
And to be not get carried away. But if you see the story of here, that king, there are so many obvious signs. And all Lord wanted for him to realize who Manikavasagar is. That's why he was playing all this drama.
Hmm.
But still the king doesn't get it. And as you said, you know, instead of realizing that it is all happening because of the treatment that he has meted out to Manikavasagar, he puts Manikavasagar back in the jail. And that is because of that, the city of Madurai now is flooded. Even then he doesn't get it. As you very rightly said, we should really pause at this point. And, you know, we should contemplate on two things.
Hmm.
One is, if you exploit God, then nature gets back at you.
Hmm.
You know, he just exploited God in the sense that, you know, he just got his horses and he made use of God and that's it. You're not thinking beyond it. So, when you exploit God, you just use God, then you have no reverence. And when you don't have reverence and nature is God's vesture, and that's where nature hits back. You know, everything that we see, all this world calamities that you see, you know, time and again, when you think you have achieved so much in technology, when you think, you know, that your advancements are so fantastic that you're almost playing God, then something suddenly happens and you feel, oh my God, I'm
helpless.
Absolutely clueless.
Clueless, yeah.
Suddenly something happens, a volcano happens, you know that someone else is in charge.
Yes.
And it comes back. It comes back, hits you so strong, so strong.
Maybe we should not take it to that.
We should never take it to that. The second thing is, the Lord is so clearly telling him, okay, if you abuse me, it is fine. I will tolerate it. But don't touch my devotee. You know, the moment he put Manikavasagar in the prison, floods happened in Madurai.
True.
So Lord is saying, you know, if you are abusing me also, I am okay. Because even if you are abusing me, you are thinking of me.
Right.
Okay, I can tolerate that. You know, I have not come to destroy you or anything, you know. But you touch my devotee and you will not be spared. And if you see, even in the story of Prahlada, as long as Hiranyakashipu was never a believer of God.
True.
For years and for generations. I mean, for decades he was never a believer of God, but nothing happened. But the moment he harmed Prahlada, that is when God said, that's it.
Enough.
Enough, enough's enough. And, you know, and God will do anything. Even if he has to take a form which is half lion, half man, and take a most grotesque looking being, he will do anything. You should never touch the devotee. And that is such a powerful lesson. But unfortunately, the king did not get it.
That is the vow of the Lord, and that's also the word of the Lord, that whoever surrenders truly will be taken care, will be liberated.
Yes.
So he keeps it up. He keeps up his word no matter what.
Actually, at this point, even if the king had prayed to the Lord or asked forgiveness, realized that it is because of this that the flood has happened, and then probably things would have been different. But what he actually did, as you said, is he ordered every citizen to go and do work to build a bandh so that the water doesn't get too much into the city. And he also gave the threat of dire consequences if someone doesn't do the allotted work.
So here, something interesting happens in the story.
Mm.
There is another, a new character is introduced, and this character also happens to be a very, very pious and devoted lady. There was an old woman living in Madurai by the name Vandi Ammayar. Pittu or Puttu in Tamil is kind of an item, a sweetmeat, a sweet which is prepared, and that is basically powdered and sweetened rice made into conical shape. And she is very good at making that puttu or pittu. She is a very old lady and she lives alone. Her only source of income is to make this pittu or puttu, and by way of selling it or offering it to people who want to have some lunch or dinner, she is to earn her money. And she is too weak to work at the bun, and also that she did not have enough money to hire somebody to do the work for her.
If you don't do the work, then you would have someone else do in your place.
Yes. Otherwise, you will face the consequences, as the king had declared.
Mm.
So she was very, very worried at that point. And then, as every devotee does, when they are in trouble, she called out to her Lord. She said, Lord, what do I do now? Now, this is the situation I am in. I don't have money. I don't have strength. So what do I do? And Ishvara, the Bholenath, as we thought of him to be, in all his compassion and grace, cannot stand even one more minute not to rush for her help. So now he takes the form, guise of a coolie.
Okay. Now he becomes a coolie.
He becomes a coolie.
A daily wage laborer.
A daily wage laborer. And he comes to the old woman and knocks on her door and asks her, Granny, do you want any help from me? I can go to the field and work for you in building that bandh. And Ammayar is very happy to find someone who is ready to offer her help. Poor thing, she did not have anyone. Mm. She lived alone. But then she had a dilemma. She told this guy, I'm very glad that you are offering me your help. But the problem is I don't have money to pay you. So I don't think I can hire you.
Mm.
Then this guy tells her, that's okay. That's not an issue at all. Because I heard so much about your puttu. You give me a little puttu to eat. Mm. I'll work for you. You don't have to pay me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a very good arrangement for Ammayar. So she says, okay, okay, that is good. You please wait, I'll make some puttu for you and then you can go for work. She went inside and she made the famous pittu or puttu that she is very famous for. But strangely, that day the puttu did not come out properly. The shape, the conical shape, it was not staying in that shape. It was becoming bits and pieces and fragments. And she was a little upset about it. But then she had offered that only to this guy, the coolie. And with great relish, he had had that food. And he was all praise for Ammayar's puttu. And then he said, let me go to the field and work for you. And he went. And one more interesting fact here is, Vishu, for her surprise, Ammayar had found out one very interesting thing that had happened. Even after she made puttu for the coolie, the dove remained intact. It did not reduce in quantity.
Oh.
It's the same quantity.
Wow. I mean, there are so many things here. I mean, first thing is Vandi Ammayar calling to the Lord and the Lord immediately
responding.
And secondly, the Lord coming now as a daily wage laborer with a spade in his hand to go and do this work. And you know, it just shows that if you are really sincere and if you are pure, you call out and he will come. I've heard in Bhagavan's discourses so many times he used to say, you call me. You sincerely call me and I will be there.
If you need me, you deserve me.
I heard in Bhagavan's discourse, you'd say so many times, you know, it will come with so much conviction. You know, only God can tell that. You call me sincerely, I will be there.
Hmm.
I will be there. And we have had so many instances like that, you know, in Shirdi Sai Avatar, you know, how Shirdi Sai put his hand into that burning hot dhuni to save the kid of a devotee who accidentally fell into the fire from the mother's lap and happened miles away. And when it comes to Bhagwan's examples, you know, there are
innumerable.
Innumerable. How many?
Every devotee will have
every
one.
Every devotee has tons of...
at least, yeah.
Stories of how Bhagwan was there in their life when they needed. In fact, I just remembered suddenly one incident of this patient who had come to Prashantinilayam sometime in 2006, December 2006. A girl from Mahbub Nagar. She was a teenager. And right from her childhood, she was afflicted with polio. So one leg was not working. And a family supported her very well. The family never made her to feel anything less. And she was studying well. She completed her graduation. She used to go for bhajans to the neighborhood. And she developed this love for Bhagwan. But there was always this one desire that I should go and serve in Prashantinilayam.
That is such a pure desire.
Pure desire. She never asked God to heal her or to give her leg back, nothing. Her only desire was that I should serve in Prashantinilayam. And her parents, they definitely wanted to fulfill that wish of their girl. And, you know, they somehow put together some money and with some volunteers who were coming from Mahbub Nagar district, in December 2006, they sent her. So she tries to get some job as a volunteer. But, you know, it becomes very difficult because most of the jobs are jobs where you have to stand or move. And it seemed like it would be very difficult for her to really cope with the duties. And they were not really very willing to give her a job. And she actually cried the whole day because, you know, it was like she had come for that. She wanted to serve. And she is not thinking about her disability. But her disability is now not giving her what she wanted.
True.
People are so concerned that they're not even giving her the chance to serve. And that's all she wanted. That's all she asked for Bhagwan. And what happens is, when she's there at the Ganesha statue, she looks at Ganesha and she prays. For the first time in her life, Gayatri, first time in her life, she says that I pray to the Lord to give me my feet. Because all I wanted was to serve you. And I'm not getting that chance because I don't have a leg. If for me to serve you, I need the leg, please give me a leg. It was the first time in her life, she asked for her leg to the Lord. And that night when she slept, she had a lovely dream where Bhagwan in his ochre robe, she saw that he was standing in front of her. And then Bhagwan puts his hand on her head and Bhagwan says, don't worry, I will take care of everything.
So beautiful.
As Bhagwan is walking away, Bhagwan places in her hand a red rose.
Swami gives her a rose.
Swami gives her a red rose. And she gets up very happy, very reassured, you know, because Swami has blessed. And she's very hopeful something will happen because the dream was so real, so vivid. And in the next morning, she goes to Ganesha again. And, you know, in the morning, the pujari does all the rituals. And when the aarti was happening, until that time, she was just standing there and she had closed her eyes and she was just reliving that moment that she had with Bhagwan in the dream. When aarti was over, that is when she actually opens her eyes. And when she opens her eyes, from the distance, she sees that the priest is now actually descending the steps of the temple, Ganesha's temple, and that priest is distributing flowers that were offered to Lord Ganesha to the devotees. And as the priest is doing this, suddenly face of the priest turns. And he walks up straight to this girl. The priest then picks up a red rose from the bunch of flowers in his hand and he hands it over.
Wow.
One look at that rose and she just starts crying. Because it's exactly the rose that Swami had given her in the dream. The resemblance was like unmistakable. You know, she says that I could not believe it really happened.
It really happened.
It really happened.
Hmm.
That's when she saw in the dream and now it's just happening in front of her. And it happens again. That night, a second night when she sleeps, again the dream happens. Again Bhagwan assures her, I will take care of you. Again Swami gives her a red rose. And the next morning she goes to Ganesha's statue. Again the same thing happens. The priest climbs down the steps and the priest is distributing flowers. The priest again gives her a red rose. It's like the whole thing, she is in a dream world.
It's like a replay.
It's a replay happening. And so now, you know, she is confident that what happened yesterday was just not coincidence, because it's happening the second time.
Hmm.
Bhagavan is like reassuring her in a million ways that whatever has happened is, you know, it's I am who is indeed taking care of you, don't worry. And that day, someone tells her uncle who had come with her that why don't you take her to the general hospital in Puttaparthi? No, because she wanted to serve and she wanted to explore the possibility of having a prosthetic leg.
Hmm.
At least if she can have a prosthetic leg, then probably they will give her a chance to serve. And so when they go to the general hospital, the doctors at the general hospital take a look at her and says that, no, no, see, what you need is not a prosthetic leg. What you need is a surgery.
Hmm.
On that other leg, on the incapacitated leg, you need a surgery, and that can be done in the super hospital in Puttaparthi. Why don't you go there?
Hmm.
In the department of orthopedics, probably they can do something for your leg. Something which will bring back strength to your lost leg. So, both of them are very surprised. You know, they had come for one work. They had come exercise, you wanted to serve, and now it is going in a different direction. But both of them, uncle and she, go to the hospital. And when the doctors see there, they examine her thoroughly and they come up with a plan of treatment.
Hmm.
But they are constantly worried because, you know, they will not have the money for this. That is the time they come to know that absolutely it is free of cost.
Hmm.
They didn't know.
Oh, they did not know.
They did not know.
Hmm.
Her only thing was she had known about Bhagwan and his love and all that. And she had leveled up that affection for Bhagwan, that love for Bhagwan. And she wanted to serve, but she had no clue about the hospital. She had no clue that everything is being done free of cost. Now, you know, when they said that, you know, your leg can be treated and it will be done free of cost, she was like overjoyed.
Hmm.
And she says, that is when these words of Bhagwan kept coming back to me, because Bhagwan very clearly told, don't worry, I will take care of you. It is at that moment that I felt certain that I would stand on my two legs. And I will stand on my two legs and I will come to serve.
Hmm.
She became so
confident
because of the turn of the events. She had polio when she was just 3 years old. In her 13th year, you know, the family, they had visited a renowned hospital close to her home, and the doctors who checked on her, they had told that there's very little hope of her walking again. They said, you know, we cannot do anything, that limb is deformed. And she's too weak. If you do any surgery also, she will not be able to recover. So it's better that we just leave it at that. And she manages with one leg. And just like anybody who has that condition, you know, she had a lot of trials and tribulations. People, you know, when you go to school and somebody makes fun of you and all that. But at the same time, as I told you, his family was very sympathetic towards her. But she was always upbeat. That was a great thing about her. And once she went to the super hospital, the hope that they gave her, that really changed her completely. And so she returned to Mahbub Nagar filled with hope, because they gave a date to come for the surgery. The first surgery happened in July 4th, 2007. And the muscles around the hip joint were released. And, you know, her hip joint was corrected. And it was a big procedure. And the doctors advised her to walk wearing calipers for 6 months. And then after 6 months, they called her for a second operation. In the second operation, her knee and her ankle were corrected. And after the second operation was performed, to everyone's surprise, she started taking her first steps, taking the support of a crutch. And she did this without undergoing any physiotherapy. The doctor said after the operation, she has to undergo weeks of physiotherapy.
Hmm.
But she started putting her steps without physiotherapy. After the second operation, she did not require physiotherapy.
Hmm.
But the doctors, just for safety, they said, you know, you use the calipers for 6 months. But when she came back for checkup in November 2008, she was able to stand on her 2 feet and walk.
Wow.
She was able to walk with her 2 feet, and her steps were slow. Sometimes she used the crutches for support, but now she had got back her legs. And the doctors who were treating her, they said that in 2 months, she will be able to walk freely without any support. But the fantastic thing is, the doctors said, the rate of her recovery is so phenomenal. It has completely surprised us. You know, sometimes recovery happens, but her case is so rare. We have never seen patients who don't want physiotherapy. Generally, patients will want the support of calipers for the rest of their life. But here is someone whose recovery happened so fast and so dramatically. This girl says, I had never prayed to Swami to grant me the use of my leg. I only had asked him that I want to do seva in Prashantinilayam.
Hmm.
And see what Bhagwan has given me. I remember when we did the story, at that time she said that
the moment I'm able to walk on my 2 feet, I will come, first thing I'll do is I'll come and serve here. Swami has given me a new life and it is my duty to do whatever I can to show my gratitude. And the best way I can show my gratitude is to serve.
Beautiful. How many people will have that purest of intentions? When she asked for her leg also, it was not for her selfish reasons.
Yes.
It was not to lead a normal life. It was only the intention of serving him. Maybe that is what must have touched Swami so much.
That purity.
Yeah.
That purity and that sincerity. That is what touched the Lord to come down as a coolie.
Yes.
Here now.
Hmm.
When that purity is there, when you're so pure and, you know, your intentions are so sincere and so bereft of selfishness and comes from so much of a space of purity.
Mm-hmm.
There's no other word for that.
True.
Then the Lord rushes.
Because he is so pure. He is just purest form of love. So whatever comes out of that space touches him instantly.
Premamrit barsa Baba.
Touch, you don't have to worry.
Yes.
Everything else is taken care of. You know, you have the story in Mahabharata of the Durvasa episode and Draupadi.
Yes, it is a beautiful story. Draupadi and Pandavas were in their exile. And they were doing this Aranyavasam, that is to spend their life, and they have to spend 12 years in the forest. And by Krishna's grace, Draupadi gets an Akshaya Patra from the sun god, and that gives you food, which is akshayam. It will never reduce. But the thing is, you can use it only once in a day. Once you use it, you cannot use it a second time in the same day. So every day you can only use it once. And with that, the Pandavas used to do a lot of annadanam, and they used to feed a lot of people, guests, and they used to entertain a lot of guests. Basically, saints and sages of the forest. One day it so happens that all the guests have gone back, and they had their meal with the Pandavas, and Draupadi used to have her meal at the last. And then she cleans the Akshaya Patra and keeps it back. After all this, Durvasa comes. Durvasa is very famous for his anger. He can get angry just like Ishwara can be pleased instantly. Durvasa can get angry instantly.
And to incur his wrath is the most dangerous
thing. Most dangerous thing. Because sages can bless you and, you know, they can uplift you to no extent. There is no height that the sages cannot reach. But at the same time, you should not incur their wrath, because they can also curse you. Mm. The power can be used in both ways. So Draupadi is now in a dilemma. She was very, very upset and worried because the sage had come for alms. So she has to feed him. Now she doesn't know what to do. Always, anytime, her only resort is her best well-wisher and friend and relative and god and guru and guide, Sri Krishna. So she goes and prays to him sincerely. And she tells him, Lord, we cannot afford to have another curse. You know, already we are in so much trouble. I'm okay with this. But I cannot afford to incur his wrath that he will curse us now.
And Durvasa with 100 disciples.
Durvasa with a lot of his, the retinue of disciples. Mm. So what do I do? And Krishna appears. So Krishna appears and he walks in. And he says, he doesn't bother about what Draupadi's mood is, and he knows that she's upset, but he doesn't seem to be bothered about it. So he comes in, and as soon as he comes in, the first thing he says is, I'm hungry.
Hmm.
Imagine Draupadi's situation. She's praying to him to show her a way out of this, and the same Lord walks in and says, I'm hungry, give me something to eat. The Lord of the universe telling you he is hungry, and you don't have anything to feed him. So then she cries. She says, you know everything and still you are testing me. What do I do with you? Then Krishna says, no, go Akshaya Patra. There will be something left, definitely. She says, no, it's not possible, because I had cleaned it myself, and when I clean, there will not be anything left. Krishna says, why don't you go and check once? She obeys him always. She goes inside and checks, and there she finds one curry leaf, which is, you know, stuck to the Akshaya Patra, mm-hmm. and which is remaining. And so she brings that and says, this is the only thing that is left. That's what I have. Krishna takes that from her hand and he eats it. He says, I'm full now. You know, my hunger is satisfied. You had fed me enough. And as Draupadi is looking at him in shock and surprise, there Durvasa and his disciples start to feel that as if they had had, you know, a 19-crore meal. And they cannot have even a sip of water.
Mm.
So somehow they have to find an excuse to leave the place.
They don't even want to come. They have to eat.
Yes. So Pandavas are waiting here because they ask them to go finish their ovulations and come. And this Durvasa with his disciples leaves from that place without even inform. And they said, no, we can't eat now. We'll come back some other time. And they leave. And Draupadi asks him, how is it that there is a leaf? I cleaned it. I know how I clean. And Krishna says, don't bother about it. Your whatever problem had come up, your issue is solved. Your concern is not there anymore. By having one leaf, if I can satisfy the hunger of so many people, can't I create a leaf?
Again, that instance of, you know, a call from Draupadi, sincere call, and how the Lord is so fantastically solves the problem. And if you take this case of Vandi Ammayar,
mm-hmm.
you know, what she offered, like that Draupadi offered that curry leaf, you know, that's what she also offered, isn't it? That pittu which was broken.
Fragments of
pittu.
Pittu.
But if Krishna is happy, you don't have to worry about anything else. You don't worry about Durvasa, you don't have to worry about Durvasa.
If the Lord is happy, the universe is happy.
See, if Lord is happy, Swami should always say, no, you cannot make everyone happy. You ensure that God is happy, that's enough.
No.
Everything else will be taken care of.
True.
And the other beautiful thing is, you know, whatever little also, if we do it with purity, you know, it is enough to fill us with bounty. It will fill us with the bounty of His grace. You have a very beautiful example here of that. As Bhagwan used to always say, what he wants is not quantity but quality.
True.
You know, it can be that curry leaf. And we know the famous example of Sudama.
Sudama, you know? Yeah. Yes.
I mean, how he was blessed with bounty, but it was that sincerity, you know. It was that love, with that purity.
God has a very good memory. He never forgets anything.
Yeah.
You know, the interesting fact about, one more fact about Sudama's story is, when Krishna and Sudama and Balarama, as kids, they go into the forest. You know the whole story. Yeah. We know the whole story. They go into the forest and then Krishna wants to eat something. Sudama doesn't tell him that he has something to eat and he eats alone. But then Krishna tells him, see, I'm tired now, so I need to rest. So Sudama loves Krishna a lot. He's his best friend. He sits down cross-legged and he says, come, you put your head on my thigh and you can rest. You sleep. So that's what he does. And then it gets over. The story follows Sudama being poor and Krishna being the Lord, and Sudama's wife sends him to Krishna for some help. And then he was not allowed into the palace of Krishna. Obviously, I mean, he is the poorest of the poor. He goes to the guards and tells him, Krishna is my best buddy pal. I mean, we were childhood friends. So let me go in. They will not allow you to see their master and emperor. And then what happens is Krishna is coming out of the palace on his chariot. And the guards push Sudama to a side. Sudama being so weak and, you know, there's no food at home to eat. So he just falls down on the ground and he faints. Then Krishna comes down from his chariot. He goes to him and he says, Sudama, you had come for me. And then he sits on the ground cross-legged. He puts Sudama's head on his thigh.
Oh, wow.
And then he revives him, you know. He tries to bring him back to consciousness, saying, I'm your friend. See, I'm Krishna. I'm here. Look at me. That's how he gains his consciousness. And then, of course, the Lord blesses him with bountiful of everything. Why I mentioned this is, even the smallest of act, smallest of service that you do in his name or for him, he is always remembered, and when he comes to give it back to you, his hands are very big. He doesn't know how to count and give. He doesn't know that. His mercy is immeasurable.
Amazing. In this episode, also if you see, the dove, it remained intact.
It remained intact.
Very interesting thing, isn't it?
Yes.
Even though she finishes making the puttu and gave, but it is like Purnamidam, Purnamidam, Purnat, Purnamudachyate, Purnasya, Purnamadaya, Purnameva, Vashishyate. It's like, you know, you take anything out of it. If you do anything for God, you never ever think that, you know, you have lost something.
Yes. Be it anything, be it our money or energy or time or comfort, because everything is given by him. Whatever he had given us, we are only using those resources.
We give something and we feel we have sacrificed.
Yes.
You know, how foolish.
How
that
foolish.
Process,
yes.
That, you know, we have sacrificed something.
Who are we to offer him anything that is not his? When you yourself belong to him, everything that you have is also his.
What sometimes we do not realize is, we will never ever stand to lose even materially.
True. Very.
If we offer to the Lord anything with a clear heart. You know, many times people feel very, very constricted to offer anything materially, you know. Because you feel, this is what my hard-earned money, what will happen to me tomorrow, how can I give off? But what we do not realize is, when you actually give to the Lord, you never ever become empty. You only actually tap into the infinite reservoirs of the Almighty.
True. But the point there is, with a pure heart and a pure intention.
Yes. It's like, I feel, if for the sake of God you give up a corporate job, he will ensure that you get a lifetime of pension.
Without any tension.
Without any tension. It is not insurance, it is assurance.
Yeah.
As they say, you know, there is no one in this world who has had implicit faith and who did not see the reward of that faith, who did not see that magical hand of the divine working.
True. Faith can move mountains, as you rightly said. And, you know, there is a beautiful quote. I used to read it quite often, just to remind myself about it. So it goes something like, faith can see the invisible, believes the incredible, and receives the impossible. So faith, with a little bit of faith, he is ready to give us anything. Because there's nothing that he cannot do or he cannot grant.
As they say, with little faith, you can go to heaven. But with great faith, you can bring the heaven to
heaven
you.
Heaven to your home. You can bring the Lord to you.
See, that's what happened with your faith. The Lord also came down as a coolie.
Came down.
Because of your faith.
And he came down as a coolie, but he didn't work.
Okay, that's how the story goes.
Yeah.
Because he didn't come to work. He came basically to teach the Pandya king a lesson.
Exactly. So, he did not work. He was idling his time there in the fields. And not only that, what he used to do is he used to go and distract everyone who was working there.
Because he wanted to create a scene perhaps.
And moreover, he knows this is not necessary. What they're doing is not necessary in fact.
Because this is symptomatic treatment of the problem. The problem
is something else.
Something else. The root of the problem is you have to know who is Manika Vasagar.
Huh.
Instead of trying to
do that.
Trying to do that.
You're toiling here.
Toiling here. And it's like how, you know, we take some medicines just to cure the symptoms. It is not going to solve the problem.
It's not going to solve the problem. So, this was happening for a while. And then, one day, King came on his regular rounds of the, just to see how the work was happening. And he found out that the area allotted to Vandhi Ammayar was not done. The work was not done and it is standing as it was. And on inquiry, he found out that there was a coolie who was hired by Ammayar, who was not only not doing his work, but he was also disturbing others. And King became very angry. So when he went in search of him, he found the coolie lying down in the grass and happily singing songs. And this had made him all the more angry. So he went and he said, see, instead of doing the allotted work, you're lying down here and singing. And in his rage, he did not know what he was doing. And he took a cane and he hit the coolie on his back. But interesting thing that had happened is this hit not only recoiled on the king himself, but on all the living beings in that area.
Oh my God, the moment the king hit, it recoiled on him.
Recoiled on
that
pain. Yes, it recoiled on him and everything that is living in that locality, in that area.
Oh wow.
So everyone had suffered that pain and hurt.
You know, we just discussed how nature is God's vesture.
True.
This is like a visible demonstration of that, you know. When you hurt nature, you hurt God. When you hurt God, you hurt nature.
If only we can remember this, especially in the present day, with so many natural calamities happening. It is only because we are meddling too much with the nature that we cannot control. We only think that we can, but it's not actually controllable by us.
The other very important thing here is that unity.
Hmm.
You know, that unity of creation. I remember in so many discourses, Bhagwan used to say that Sarva Jiva Namaskaram Keshavam Pratigachati, Sarva Jiva Tiraskaram Keshavam Pratigachati. It's like whomever you do pranams or you pay respects, it goes to the divine. If you abuse anyone, ridicule anyone, also it goes to the divine.
It goes to the same divine.
It's like everything is one.
Hmm.
And this is like a beautiful example of that, you know. The king hits the Lord and everybody gets affected, including the king.
Including himself. Yes.
Including the king. In fact, that so many instances like that. If you see Shirdi Baba's life, you have that instance where, you know, because Shirdi Baba used to go to the temple and shout Allah Malik, and, you know, he used to go to the mosque and he used to say Dattatreya Malik. And so there are always these fights between both these communities. And the Muslims are very unhappy that, you know, the Hindus were coming to the mosque and the Hindus were coming to Baba. Their problem was why the Hindus are coming to this. Baba belongs to us. Why Hindus are coming to Baba? And there was this devotee, Mahal Sapati, who was a priest in the Khandoba temple. He was someone who used to come to Baba and sit near Baba. You know, these Muslims, they wanted to show their anger on these Hindus. So they go and beat him up with sticks. And the story goes that, you know, at every stroke, Mahal Sapati cries out, Baba, Baba. And each time he shouted Baba, Baba, that pain, that hit was borne by Baba.
Oh.
And finally, Mahal Sapati fell to the ground. And at that point, Baba came from inside. When Baba came from inside, the Muslims suddenly showed a lot of respect to Baba because, you know, they felt they have done the right thing because this Hindu is simply coming and disturbing their place of worship, which is actually a Muslim place of worship because Baba is a Muslim. And that is when Shirdi Sai roars at this Muslim crowd and says, Shaitan, on one side you worship me, on the other side you beat me.
Hmm.
Is this your devotion? He shouts, you know, and we know how it was a Rudra form of Shiva. Shirdi Sai was Shiva himself.
True.
It was that form when everybody gets scared because Baba shouts and tells them that what is this devotion? You worship me and you beat me like this. And then they say, no, we were only beating Mahalsapati. And that is where Shirdi Baba shows his body, that his body was bleeding all over.
Oh.
Body was bleeding all over. And then Shirdi Sai goes to every person there who had bet Mahalsapati and, did you not beat me?
Oh, look at the compassion.
And then they fall at Baba's feet and they say, we did not come. Baba, actually we did not come near you at all. We didn't want to harm you. We were only beating Mahalsapati. And then Baba says, who is in Mahalsapati? Who is in him? It is I who is in him. He has surrendered to me. And so all his troubles are mine. You should not forget that it is I who reside in everybody. And I think there are so many instances like that. You know, we know of how Bhagwan once was traveling in the car and someone went over
a snake.
And you know, those marks were there on his robe.
This only proves the Veda Vakya, Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam. The one resides in all. That means any pain that we cause,
yes,
to any being is equivalent to causing pain to the God himself.
Yes.
And in the same way, any amount, even the smallest amount of happiness that we can cause for others,
yes,
other beings, is same, yeah, as making him happy.
In fact, our approach is always like this. So how fantastic our life will be. If you love someone, you feel, okay, I'm loving God.
Hmm.
If you help someone, you feel, okay, I'm serving God. Then you don't get attached also to that person or to that thing. Because, you know, everything is only directed to him.
True.
Then actually life becomes very light.
Life becomes easy.
Amazing.
So dear listeners, let's pause here for this week's episode as time is running out and we have one final episode of this conversation about Saint Manikya Vasakar, which we'll have next week. I know we have narrated many side stories in this conversation as we ruminated on the incidents related to Saint Manikya Vasakar, but then I feel it is important to pause and at every instance reflect, because the stories of these people are stories specially crafted by God. It is Bhagavatam and there are so many precious things to be learned, and the whole point of dwelling on these tales is to dilate on them and imprint them in our heart and then implement them in our lives. We hope you found something of value, something worth reflecting on this discussion on the life of this magnificent saint, Saint Manikya Vasakar. Please feel free to send your feedback. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. Thank you so much for being with us throughout the program. Please forgive us for our shortcomings. We offer this program at the lotus feet of our most beloved Bhagwan. Thank you so much. Sai Ram.